Yeah, and by the way, clarification on wins. This is my definition. To me, a win is anything big or small. Hey, you had a breakthrough. You had an idea, an aha moment. You're starting to think about this a little differently in a way that's maybe a little bit more helpful. You're starting to see a path for you. All that is a great win. So is, you know, starting your juicy offer copy.
So I had something happen. I attended the I'm attending the AWAI boot camp.
Uh-huh.
And Ryan Dice did a presentation on what he called the business process mapping. That's like mapping your customer journey. And it's a whole process that dovetails exactly what I want to do with my clients, and especially one that I'm working with now. That I can put into the marketing strategies where I'm going to go with it first.
That sounds great.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was. I was looking at it and I was like, "Holy cow, this is great! This is exactly what I wanted to do." So I'll be able to drop that right into my process.
When the student is ready, the teacher appears, right? And I think I even mentioned this in week three or the third session, where you don't have to create all of your own methodology. You can use other people's methodologies to deliver strategy sessions, right? I needed a new growth strategy framework because I've taken on a few fractional CMO roles, and I just kind of needed to beef up my toolkit. And sure enough, like the two perfect things came along this week, just like prepackaged, ready for me in a Facebook post in a private community I'm a part of. And you're like, it's like, yes, you know, yes. Anyway, thanks for sharing.
Good stuff. All right. Who else? Who else had something they would call a win this week?
I think I've come closer to identifying what my strategy offers will look like, which is kind of a problem for me. So like converting your concepts into tailor them to the industry that I'm in. So I think I'm very close to like knowing what that would look like. And to me, that was a big win. That is a big win, because I think the upfront thinking about what it is harder than compiling the pitch and the mm-hmm. and marketing, you know what I mean? So I'm getting there.
It's almost great. Like coming up with the hook for a piece that you're writing. It's like you spend 80% of your time coming up with the hook, the core concept, and once you've got it, the rest kind of writes itself.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Anyone else? Good job, Vicky. It's got to feel
good. Oh, and I just adopted a puppy.
That is a win.
That's a win, yeah.
I don't know. Not too many a couple of sleepless nights. I'm a little old for this.
You know, I should mention, I am a student here as well. I think Austin knows this, but I'm sitting here and I'm answering questions, but I apply this material as well. And I've learned so much from Austin. And a few months ago, I decided to create just a juicy offer for my coaching. You know, my coaching is delivered in many ways in this format or following this model, but I decided to create a juicy offer for something I hadn't, like a different model of coaching. And I call it a breakthrough engagement. It's a short-term, very laser focused type of coaching. And I put it out there, and I tell you, it's been really, really successful. I just do a quick announcement to my mailing list, and I always fill the available slots. And it's been really not only successful for me, more importantly, it's been very helpful for the people who have gone through it. We've been able to solve very specific surgical problems through this. So I'm applying this material as well, guys. I'm a student just as much as you are.
Nick, I saw you, Nick.
I can't hide anywhere. I missed the sort of first few minutes, but I wasn't sure what the question was. But it's just to say, I've started to pitch some of these offers, And I've got a question which can maybe save for later about, I've held off pitching it until maybe tomorrow, and I'm thinking maybe it might be a content planning session. It was from a client who just wanted the usual stuff, churn out some blogs, but they hadn't really thought about the come up with a content plan or a calendar, but we could maybe cover it later.
You can cover it now.
Oh, okay. Well,
let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, I got referred this client, which is a kind of UK medium-sized accounting firm, growing quite rapidly, but sort of doesn't do that much content blogs. And I got referred from a contact of mine because I write a lot about professional services. And so I had this call with this guy, marketing person, who seemed pretty nice and keen to work with me, but he wanted to go down the route of, right, Nick, you specialize in technology and professional services. Can you help us maybe do 3 or 4 blogs a month? And I was like, ooh. And so I just tried to sort of push back a bit and ask about the goals. And at the end, I said, look, and the best way I can help you is just through some maybe half day road mapping session. Because I said, look, to be honest, I could write these blogs for you, but unless you've got a clear idea about your goals, you're unlikely to get the full value. Mm-hmm. And he seemed kind of open to that. And then there might be the option that I'd sort of help write some of those blogs and help each month come up with ideas for the blogs. But what I'm now trying to consider is how to put that proposal, because I think it's partly come up with, they want to write about 4 different industries, to come up with ideas for those, but also work out the key messages, what the company stands for. So it's a bit of messaging, it's a bit of content planning, and then it's a bit of idea creation. And I was going to propose a 4-hour one, but I was thinking about, as Austin, I was reading your, I think it was in the last session, about maybe breaking it up into 2 90-minute sessions, and it would be done remotely. But that's the thing I'm grappling with.
So I'll start with the last consideration first, which is like breaking it up. And when it is virtual, I just have found it hard to maintain the energy level past about 90 minutes. Yeah. So I started breaking them up. But here's the thing, especially with these early sessions, if you put in 2 90-minute sessions and you still don't feel like you're quite finished, I have never regretted being generous, especially with my early clients. Do another session to make, like, do whatever you have to do to make those early sessions a home run, and then get the testimonial, engineer that case study you want. And I found that that makes me even more confident the next time around when I want to sell this again. Okay. In terms of how do you structure this type of content road mapping session? Mm-hmm. I think you're right that some challenges with effective or high quality content have at their root ambiguity or lack of clarity around core brand messaging. You know, it's really hard to do great copywriting, for example, if you're not even sure what the brand is, because the client isn't sure what the brand is. So I'll tell you a couple of really specific exercises that are part of my brand development methodology that I often kind of port over to my content road mapping. First of all, because they end up being like the, I don't know if you've ever been to a fireworks show and there's always the grand finale, right? Sometimes with content road mapping, I like to start with something that is so helpful that it's like after the first 30, 45 minutes, they're like, everything else is icing on the cake as far as we're concerned, right? So I call this a really basic differentiators exercise. And what I'll do with the client is actually send them a document up front with a whole list. I think I've got a couple dozen at this point, different types of differentiators. A lot of them will want to talk about product features or the way they deliver a service, maybe some industry certifications, maybe awards they've won. But there are lots of different types of differentiators, right? like being known for your high character, right? That's a differentiator, right? So there are lots of facets to differentiator, but I'll send them that in advance before we even get to the formal session. Give them a chance to go ahead and brainstorm some options, ideally maybe with other people on the team, or if it's the solopreneur, you know, maybe a spouse or somebody who knows them really well, right? Anyway, in your case, maybe there's someone else on the marketing team that the marketing director could do this with. When you actually get to the session, you help them basically force rank the differentiators and say, let's rank these based on which ones are most important to your target audience or most valuable to them. Because there is I would slightly delineate between valuable and important, right? But anyway, it's helpful for you to have that full list of differentiators if you're then going to turn around and perhaps create a value proposition for those four different segments of their target audience, or four different verticals or niches or whatever you want to call it, right? So if you've got that list of differentiators, which is kind of like a messaging grab bag at that point, right? You could spend like the first third of a workshop just helping them develop brand positioning, like which position does your brand occupy in the marketplace? That's typically broader, right? But a value proposition is tied not to the brand, but a specific product or a specific service. So you could say, hey, you know, what service do you want to sell? Oh, it's accounting services and you're wanting to sell it to insurance companies. Okay, cool, right? How are we going to match up some of your key differentiators with that target audience? And if you marry that up for each target audience, my guess is by that 1 hour into a workshop with you, they're going to be more clear than they have ever been on, you know, we have a strong grasp of our brand position. We have a strong grasp of our differentiators. More importantly, we know which differentiators are most important to this segment of our target audience. And we're already most of the way there, 80% there, with like a succinct, impactful value proposition for that target audience. And now you're like, okay, let's brainstorm some topics. Like, what could you write about for them? Well, maybe you could actually bend some of the topics toward other differentiators that aren't covered in the value proposition, right? But that's one of the first things I would do with that type of workshop. If you need to do some core brand messaging, brand position, value proposition differentiators, that's typically a very, very good use of time, high value, and makes some of the ideation and topic brainstorming easier after the fact. And then from there, help them rank the ideas. Try not to make any quality judgments at first. Just like, let's come up with 40 ideas or 20 ideas or 15 ideas as quickly as we can. And then after we've just done the pure brainstorming, then we can start to filter them and say which ones are most promising, with the idea maybe that you send them away with four or five really, really good ideas for each target audience. And then maybe they pick one idea and then you help them in a very tactical way, kind of frame it out and say, okay, this is gonna be a list of tools. It's a listicle, or this one's going to be like industry insights. And then this one's going to be, you know, questions insurance companies should ask before they hire an accounting firm, or that kind of thing, right? So that is one way that I've approached it in the past. It's half messaging, high level strategic stuff, which is really necessary and really valuable. But I've found that specifically with strategy sessions, sometimes you got to give people a little bit of tactical at the end. We're all so biased toward tactics that it's almost like you give them the nutrition up front and then you give them dessert, you give them a little sugar at the end, and like, man, that was great, you know? And you know that the strategy is more valuable, but the tactics are what send them away with that glow. All right, I'll shut up. Does that help?
Yeah, it's very useful. Thank you.
Good stuff. All right. So if anyone's got a question, you guys know the drill, right? Type in a capital Q in the chat area and then give us a one or two line explanation of what you've got. We'll unmute you, but I want to make sure that before you come on that you have a specific question in mind. So we got an open floor right now, by the way, which is tells me that you guys are still being a little too shy. Come on, it's week three. You know, like we're all family by now. You know, I may not wear a collared shirt next time. I might just come in a tank top. Well, maybe not, but
we're all family. And I'm like, I just took it off. I'm like, you know what? It's week three. No more collared shirt.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's see. We have any? Nope, not yet. Hey, one thing that I was going to echo something you said, Austin, because I know, again, being a student of yours, there was something that made me really anxious, which was not only did I got to figure out this offer, but then how to pitch it, how to present it, and then make sure that the logistics are perfect right out of the gate. That was my thinking. Like, you know, how many sessions and when will we meet and how will we meet and how long are they? And I realized that is a lot of pressure, and it was keeping me from actually putting that offer out there. Okay. So I hope this resonates with some of you guys. You said something very important, which is like, look, at first, this is a theoretical exercise. You can estimate how long this is going to take in the flow of it. And it's probably going to be fairly accurate, but don't stress out. You won't really know until you do the first one. At that point, you're right. If you realize that after two, in this case, two 90-minute sessions, you're going to need a half hour session. And maybe they don't have time. They only blocked out 90 minutes. But you're going to need a half hour session to kind of consolidate everything or for you to present, you know, your recommendations in a very clear way. Schedule that one. Just give it to them. You know, think of this as a testing ground right now. And listen, by the second or third, you're going to have this down. But don't wait for perfection. Don't wait to, you know, try to have it perfect in your head before you go out there and offer it. And that's what I did. I'm like, man, I did these breakthrough engagements. I'm like, this sounds about right from my experience, but I don't know. And I had to make some adjustments after the first couple of them. And really to this point, I've done a bunch of them. I've done like, I don't know, 15, 12, 15. I'm still thinking about tweaking some things, but I don't know what to tweak unless I get out there. So anyway. Mm-hmm.
Good.
All right. Don't be shy, guys. I know you got, there you go. Carol's got a question here. She said, I've often had the, can you do a blog post or 10 fact sheets or whatever? And I can tell they haven't thought this through and they need more of a strategy, but they have a budget and direction for this piece only. Austin went into this a bit on the videos, but I'd love to elaborate on how to break it to them that they need more strategy. Great question, Carol. Let's bring you on.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, I missed the first two, so I'm happy to be here.
Yes.
So I used to work a lot with, particularly with sort of international and USAID government related organizations, and they would have, they have their little budget for communications for the year, and this includes for blog posts or whatever. And so they want to hire, they asked me to do it. And I can tell they haven't thought through who's their audience, you know, basic stuff like who's your audience, why, what's your goal, you know, what's the best, is this really the best channel? Basic communication strategy stuff. And things that you're talking about. And sometimes they'll just say, we just need this, and they don't want to talk about it. So how do you offer? Yeah. How do you get past that? If there's resistance?
So three ways, knowing that all of them could fail. And sometimes you just need to walk away. Right.
Yes.
Number one, it's the most practical, right? Sometimes you just need the money. Sometimes I've just needed the money. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do the project for you. But I kind of need you to make my job a little bit easier. Strategy would do that. You don't have strategy. Right? So what I will ask them to do is fill out a project brief for me. And so because I have a project brief template, and I will think, what are the pieces of their strategy that are missing that if they were intact would honestly make the work product a lot better? So I take what I do know, I put that in the project brief, and you're like, yes, you know, I'm really interested in this project, really trying to wrap my head around it still. You know, would you go ahead and fill in the missing details in the project brief? And then I'll be in a better position to like give you a final price.
That's brilliant. Okay.
And then if they come back, they're like, well, we don't know what our strategy is. Right. So sometimes I've needed, and maybe this is like coming from a family of people who are hopelessly passive until they're very, very aggressive, right? But I'm like I'm polite and I don't like to fight. And I'm like, how do I find a very polite way to say, your head is screwed on backwards right now. And I'm the only person who in this room who's not high, right? So anyway, I would say if they can't fill in the gaps, then you've found a polite way to make it obvious that there's more foundation level work to be done. At which point you've now created the opportunity to sell into. It's hard to try to sell people on solving a problem they don't think they have yet.
I think they have. That's it. That's exactly it.
So how do you use a tool to surface the problem to make it obvious to both parties? Because then if they start to believe it's a problem, you've heard that sales is a transfer of belief.
Sorry,
it's really,
what did you say?
Sales is a transfer of belief, right? And so oftentimes if we really struggle to sell something, it's because the other party, they don't believe they need it.
Yes.
Right. So, yes. So that's the first idea, right? Which dovetails into the second idea, which is if they start to recognize that they need it, say perhaps we could write 5 fact sheets now and spend the other budget on a little bit of strategy. And then I'll even give you like my fact sheet template if you all want to hire me with extra budget to write the remaining 5. I would obviously love that, but if you need to save budget and use some of my templates to write the remaining 5 yourself, at least I've given you good strategy and I've given you 5 really good fact sheets, and then I've set you up to get what you need from that point forward, right?
That's great.
So those are the, I guess that was only 2. There's a 3rd one, but it has slipped my mind. So okay. there are 2 ideas.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I would say the 3rd might be that, you know, maybe based on other factors, you decide that this is not going to be a good fit for you.
Yep.
Walk away.
Yeah. I always like to leave that last because I don't, you know, I always want to try to make it work. But maybe the conditions are such, Carol, that's like, you know, I've been down this road before. And, you know, I've offered several solutions and I can tell that they're just not open-minded. And maybe right now I don't quite need this. And I'm not willing to give them something that I just know in my heart is going to be useless. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I've also bumped into some of them buy into it and others don't. So they're tussling.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind too that, guys, this is not what we're talking about here. What we're asking you guys to do is not going to be a fit for every client and every situation.
For sure. Of course.
Right. So we want to, where you see an opportunity, mention it in, you know, again, sales, but there are going to be situations where you didn't have to make a decision. You know, it's just not aligning. So maybe you do it the old way.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Ed, just a piece of language. You touched on this, but a piece of language that has worked well for me. You know, I don't believe I can do work that I'm going to be really proud of without spending more time with you on X, Y, and Z. If you need to move forward without X, Y, and Z, and thus without me, I totally understand. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to work together in the future. So that's a way I have found to say, I can't in good conscience commit to the project parameters of you as you have laid them out, right? And if they're in a pinch, sometimes they'll go find the extra budget for strategy. Come on.
This is great, actually, because come to think of it, just a month or two ago, someone came to me and they wanted more blog pieces. Yeah, this absolutely the same exact same thing happened. They wanted more blog pieces. I took a look at their blog. It sucks. Totally horrible, poorly written, way too much jargon. It's all the same stuff that nobody looks at. It's terrible. Boring as hell. So I, instead of doing this, I sat down and I spent a couple hours writing a really nice proposal for them to rethink and how they might rethink it. And, blah, blah, blah. And they wrote back and they said, yeah, that's really good, but we don't have we're not there yet. Maybe in a year. We just want these damn blog pieces done. And I walked mm-hmm. away. I was not going to do more rubbishy blog pieces for them.
It can feel like your integrity is sort of costing you money in the short term. Yeah. But I have found that I most enjoy working with business and nonprofit leaders who have a high value for strategy. So one of the reasons this was transformative for my business is because strategy itself became the filtering mechanism for will I enjoy working with this client or not?
Interesting.
Because like I have found that leaders who value strategy, that goes hand in hand with leaders who are coachable and will let me lead them. So sure enough, the clients who won't pay for strategy are almost never good clients down the road. Now, one caveat, and then I guess we can move on. I have a few times said, are you going to move forward with this, with the original parameters, with or without me? And sometimes they say yes. And I'm like, and after I've stated that I think it's actually a bad idea to proceed, if I still want the money and I actually do like the client, I just think they've gotten themselves into a tough situation with whatever. It's like, yeah, we're going to execute on this really bad trade show idea, and we just need somebody to, you know, spin up some copywriting for just this terrible idea, right? I'll still say yes sometimes because I can in good conscience, because I already made it clear I think the strategy is unsound, which is also a way of saying this isn't on me if you don't get the results that you want.
Right. Right.
And at that point, I typically have good rapport and I'm like, you might as well give me your money. I'll do the work for you. And then could we please keep the strategy door open in the future? So that's the one sort of caveat on what I said about sometimes people get themselves into a tight spot and they really can't slow down and spend more time on strategy. You can have compassion. You can still help them, but just make it very, very clear that you're helping them because you want to help them, not because you actually think it's a great plan. Anyway. We can move on. Great, okay. Great question, Carol.
Thank you.
Hey, Austin, you've been breaking up a little bit throughout. I don't know if it's your AirPods, or I don't think it's your internet connection. So maybe while I read this next question, we can give this a try. Alice, I'm going to bring you in next. Let me just see if I figured you had a backup. I do the same thing. I keep a backup
Ed,
of
Ed. I think he's been clear as a bell. Just from my perspective, he hasn't broken up in mind.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Like brilliance. It's been good.
Okay. All right. So that's good. Has anyone noticed? Maybe it is me. You okay? So Carol has noticed a little bit. All right. Well, let's try this new pair and see if maybe this is a little better on my end. So Alice had a question about. She said, I've got a problem, probably not all common with writers. I have enormous difficulty coming up with ideas. Alice, let's talk. Good question.
Well, I can write most anything that in my industry, if you tell me what you want. Mm-hmm. But coming up with ideas seems to escape me a lot. And so I know this is probably outside the scope of this session, but we're brainstorming with our clients, and that means if they want to feel like they're getting their money's worth, I need to contribute the bulk mm-hmm. of the ideas, and they go poof.
Well, I don't think it's an unusual problem, right? So let me give you some very tactical advice. One of the first things you can do with any client is just say, hey, where do people in your industry go for news? And you can go to those places. I use a service called Feedly, Feedly. And you can set up feeds for every client you have based on their industry. And so, like, once you know that this particular podcast is one of the most popular ones, you know, with consultants who are growing SaaS companies, right? Oh, great. Now you'll get a notification anytime they drop a new episode, right? Feedly. Number two, BuzzSumo, B-U-Z-Z, sumo, like the Japanese wrestler, or Chinese. I think it's Japanese. Anyway, Japanese. So BuzzSumo, you can set up a free account. You can do topical searches, and then you find out what has been trending or even what's been most popular based on total engagement numbers. So what they do is you do it, like, if you're typing in, you know, like how to sell strategy as a freelancer, you could see anything that's come up on that topic. And that's a really good way to actually see, oh, here's what other people are writing about that has landed well, right? And you know it's landed well because people voted with their attention. They shared it, they commented, that sort of thing. Number three, our old standby, Google Trends. What have people been looking for recently in this specific niche, this specific market vertical, right? Number four, this one doesn't get used nearly as much, but it's a gold mine, Reddit, and specifically subreddits. So when you think about a forum where people just show up and talk things to death. Like, there's one, surely I haven't mentioned this to you all, extreme ironing. Did you know this is a thing? Like, people put themselves in dangerous situations and then they, like, iron a shirt, right? I'm like, you people need more things to do with your time. Anyway, to each his own, I guess, right? But there is a subreddit for every type of subculture, every interest you can imagine. But what's interesting, though, is you can find stuff that's a little more on the fringes within a specific subject or topic, right? And then you can go to something like subreddit stats and figure out, well, which of these subreddits is most popular? And then once you're inside of a subreddit, you can actually search and filter the results so that you're looking at the most popular comments. And again, people are voting with their attention. So if you go into a subreddit and then you go and read the most popular comments and then any comments in reply to that one, then you're able to say, wow, like, I had no idea that people were so obsessed with X, Y, and Z, right? So that's one way to just say, like, there are always people who are sort of like on the outer edge of the next innovation cycle. They're always looking for the next thing. And a lot of our clients, when we write content for them, they want to kind of be the ones to break the news if they can, because often they want to be the ones recreating value for their target audience by bringing ideas that aren't quite mainstream yet and helping them make them mainstream, right? So that's several ways that you can do it. And then, oh, there was one other one. My brain is slippery today. Anyway.
I got a few ideas. I got a few others.
Throw them in.
Kind of in a different category. Newsjacking. I love newsjacking. So newsjacking is taking kind of a current hot topic and then figuring out how your clients' industry, services, products can tie to that. Okay, so I saw a brilliant example the other day. There's tons of these. And once you start seeing them, you can't unsee them. This company did this really cool article of they took, I think it was Elon Musk, and they said, these are the books that Elon Musk has recommended the most when he's interviewed. And then they talked about each, gave a brief summary, links to them. And then guess what? The company who wrote the article, they're in the business of selling book summaries. So then actually, I should say that they weren't linking to the books on Amazon. They were linking to their summaries. You know, and what they want is not for you to buy them individually. They want you to be a subscriber. But I thought that was brilliant. Hey, Elon Musk is like front page news right now. He's recommended books. Some people hate him. Some people like him, but we're just going to go with it. What does he recommend? You see this a lot with Warren Buffett, any current events, anything that's hot. So news tracking. The other, and this is actually my favorite, is getting ideas internally from the client and asking them two things. What topics have gotten the most traction and comments? And two, and this is my favorite, I want to know from your customer support or your sales team, what are the biggest objections they get? Biggest questions and objections. And typically the questions are objections in a question format. I want to know, what are they getting out there? Because we need to write about that. And that right there will give you a wealth of ideas. I actually like to start internally and then do what Austin says, then go externally, you know, for other ideas. So I hear you, Alice, but I don't believe you because I know that once you start like you're not going to be able to stop yourself. Like the ideas are going to start coming.
And the nice thing is that you can sort of batch your research. So if you need to go generate some ideas, you allocate like 45 minutes or an hour for that. You don't have to share all those ideas with the client right away. If they're only asking for a handful of ideas, that's all you share. And they're like, wow, these are great. And you're like, cool, I've already done my work for next month and the work after that. Two other ones, one kind of piggybacks off something Ed said. If you can get access to any kind of analytics and see which topics or posts have performed the best in terms of engagement for them in the past, you take that topic and just write it in 20 different ways. And that's actually a good content strategy. Don't continue to just write on any topic, right? What is going really, really well for them already? Which blog post has generated the most traffic over the last 12 months? You know, take one small section of that post and then blow it out and make it longer, right? And then the other one is SimilarWeb. It's a website. Go there. You can plug in a competitor's website. See which of their posts are performing the best. See which keywords are sending them the most traffic. Because if you come back and you're like, hey, you know, your number one closest competitor gets a lot of traffic from these three keywords, and I think that we could write posts like that, but write them better. I mean, they're going to be licking their chops, right? Like, oh, that sounds great. So double down on what's already working, and then snoop on what's working for your client's closest competitors. And that will typically give you some really good ideas too. But you are not alone, Alice.
That's good to find out. Plus, subscribe to news feeds, right?
News feeds. Yeah. Automate as much of it as you can, right? For my weekly newsletter, I always have 20 or 30 options of resources, tools that I can share, right? Because they all just drop in the same place. It's an aggregator. Back in the old days of RSS, it was even easier, but it's not so easy anymore. Anyway.
Thank you.
Of course, Alice, I'm glad you asked that. It's, you're definitely not alone. Jeff has a question here. He says, my website has a product package section for my copywriting services. Should I place these strategy packages before or after these service packages? I'm sales enablement is his focus. I'm starting a campaign with my existing contacts and clients involving helpful articles with a CTA that drives interested people to my website. All right, let's bring you in, Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hey.
Thanks. Hey. Yeah, great question. Great question. So, Austin, what do you think?
I think sell the strategy packages first and also put them at the top of the page above the SEO packages. And I say that because I've actually found it easier to sell bigger packages. If I sell a strategy session first, they're just so good at building rapport, bringing fresh insight, you know, earning trust, creating clarity. And because it's like a one-off session, it's easier to sort of move it up to the end, other end on the premium side of the pricing spectrum so that you have really good price anchoring. You're not going to charge X number of, you know, $750 for this sales enablement strategy session. And then after that, have a rock bottom price. So your positioning is really good. Your price anchoring is really good. And kind of like we talked about earlier, based on whether or not they'll bite on a strategy session, you kind of know how strategic they're going to be or let you be during a bigger engagement. And the last thing I'll say is I like strategy engagements because they let me vet somebody and get a sense of their personality and what they're going to be like as a collaborator before I'm going to potentially be spending months trying to help them heave a big project across the finish line, right? And there have been a few times with a strategy session, I got to the end and I'm like, I have no desire to continue working with this person. If I do want to continue working with them, wonderful. You take one of your bigger engagements and you just squeeze that in the end, at the end of your report. Oh, here's your strategy session report. And the very last section will just be like, and great, if you actually want to knock these issues out one by one, here's what that's going to look like in terms of cost, scope, and timeline. So does that help?
Yeah, yeah, that does a lot. I think you framed it in a way that makes sense from the customer's perspective. I guess the last thing they want to do is go down a sales enablement strategy path that won't get the results that they need. So you're right, doing it first is better.
There's another positioning thing here too. I don't talk about quite as much, but there's a lot of trust to be gained if you're the provider who says, let's pump the brakes a little bit rather than, hey, let's get you to like giving me a lot of money as quickly as possible. So like downselling people will sometimes surprise them. Be like, I think I would love to work with you on this, but what do you think we test out the relationship with a smaller engagement first? And I'll get you clarity. I'll get you an actionable plan. You know, I think I can like turn up a lot of insights around why sales enablement isn't where you currently want it to be. And then at the end of that engagement, it's going to be pretty clear to both of us whether or not we want to keep going together. And that's the way I like to, you know, form relationships with new clients anyway. And so that the downselling tactic for building trust faster has been really effective for me.
That's a really good point. It sort of backs off from the car salesman attitude, right? Sell, sell, sell. And you, if you tell them you don't want to necessarily do business yeah. with them in a harsh way right away, just let's take it slow. Yeah.
Jeff, what do we got to do today to get you in a new Dodge? Yeah. You know, I want to see you driving off the lot today in a new Dodge, Jeff.
Oh, man. I kind of relate it as well to the dating market, right? You're in a bar and too much of a hard sell and the girl's going to back off, right?
Yeah. But the best negotiators don't need the deal. And if you actually downsell them, that puts you in a position of strength. Like, I don't have to have this. I certainly don't have to have the biggest price tag I can sort of extract from you.
Okay. Good. It's good advice. Thanks.
Great question. And you know, I would even add, Austin, that my objective over the long haul would be to build a business, a writing, mm-hmm. copywriting, marketing business, where this piece becomes a non-negotiable. Like the way Correct. I work with clients is we start this way. Now, it doesn't mean you do that from day one. I'm saying long-term, I want to get to that point. Mm-hmm. So if that's kind of the end game, then I want to position those things first on the website, in conversations and mm-hmm. in all these things as a way to start like laying the groundwork for that. That would be another underlying reason.
And Jeff, I mean, why not just go ahead and add the strategy session as like, you probably do this anyway, the first phase of a bigger sales enablement engagement, right? You're doing some sort of diagnosis or audit, some kind of like, hey, let's figure out what's not going well so that we can set priorities and start to change and optimize some things. So it would look really good on the page if what they see at the beginning of a bigger engagement is nearly identical to what you're selling them at the beginning. And you could call it road mapping, sales enablement, road mapping, whatever, right? But I think that's really effective because it's logical, right? Here's the way I'm going to start with you if you sign up for a big package. Here's the way I'm going to start for you if you only buy the very first piece. Either way, I believe based on my experience, this is the very best way for someone like me to start with a client like you. And yes, you'll still have some clients who don't want to do that. And then you can decide whether or not you're willing to sign up with them at that point. But strategy is addictive because it's effective, right?
Yeah, you're right. I hate to admit it, but I've been kind of offering an initial strategy session for free, right? You guys opened my eyes to selling it as a service initially, or even on a subscription basis. I guess I was short selling my decades of experience working in business and just sort of offering that up as a part of the process for free. But really, there's value to that. So
100%. And, you know, that was why I got into this in the first place, is I was so short on time. I was like, I can't afford to do these marathon discovery sessions anymore. I literally don't have the time. I've got to find some other way to figure out whether or not I even want to do business with this client. And meanwhile, I was doing all this startup stuff, accumulating all this incredibly valuable perspective that was so enriching when I did work with a client, because I was, you know, I hadn't been just a writer in years, but my understanding of my own value hadn't quite caught up to that. Right. So that's what this program is for, as much as anything, is that helping you all with that, accelerate that paradigm shift of, wait, I've been consulting for years. It's just time I start charging for it.
Good.
All right. Again, guys, if you have a question, need feedback, just type in a queue, give us a line or two, let us know what you've got. We'll bring you in. I feel like I've discovered something right now in the past 5 minutes. And I'm going to tell you guys, we're all family, right? I just discovered that the chat window, you can actually increase the size of the font by doing Command Plus. All these years of me going, you saw me straining. Did anyone know about this and didn't tell me? Because I just realized this is wonderful. So funny. All right. Carol has a follow-up question. In fact, it ties to what Jeff just talked about, which was, she asked before Jeff asked this question, if the client doesn't bite on a paid strategy session, do you offer them a short one for free?
So I will always do a discovery session with a brand new relationship just to get a sense of their personality and whether or not I think we could work well together, whether I like their business, I like what they're up to, right? And then I need that first call to get a sense of how would I score their clarity? Because most clients don't come to you saying, I'm clueless, I have no idea what I want. They come to you saying, here's what I want. And then I ask follow-up questions during that discovery call. And then I have that growing awareness that, oh, like what they think they want, I don't think that's what they need. How do I sort of help them come over to my way of seeing? Well, after that first discovery call, if I then propose a strategy session and then they're not going for it, at this point, I typically just walk away. I'm not saying that that's sort of this ironclad recommendation for everybody. We're all in different places in our careers. But I will say that if I don't believe that I can do work that I'm proud of without getting a much better plan or a much stronger strategy, I mean, for the sake of my reputation and even like not making myself miserable doing work I think sucks because I was set up to fail. I know it gets kind of muddy and it's a case by case basis, right? And I even said earlier, sometimes if I think the client's great and they just got themselves into a tight spot, yes, I might like, let me help you come up with a tagline, even though you have no idea what your brand is. Sure. In a pinch, mm-hmm. Right? But if I think they need strategy and they don't think they need strategy, and it's not really a timeline consideration, I normally walk away.
Then I'm just remembering hearing people talk about this. I'm just remembering all these times that I've like given people entire website rewriting strategies and whole strategy and sitting there for 2 hours. And then they say, well, we don't have a budget or, you know, I mean, I know now you ask about that stuff first, but so in this discovery call, how long do you, there's this discovery session, how long is that usually? And is that after you've done like a quick site audit and done your homework on them?
So I try to put as little time as possible into vetting them before we get on the call. And I think it's sort of like personality and their presence on the call is like most important to me. Right. And then I'll get a sense, or maybe we look at their site together while we're on the call. Right. Those calls are 20 to 45 minutes for me. Typically, I will often send over in advance the questions that I want to have answers to by the end of the call. Did I share those? Have I shared those before? Those of you who've been at the other sessions? Okay, Vicky's saying yes. I can paste those into the chat again.
But I think they were in like session. Yeah, you had them in the last, I think it was last call, last week's call.
Okay. But Carol, I'll put those in for you into the chat. And then I want to show you all one more thing I'll just do a screen share really fast, because with this whole like evaluating clients, vetting clients, trying to figure out whether or not you like want to move forward with them, assuming you're not desperate for the money and your own bills are making the decision for you, right? Sometimes it's almost like you could kind of go either way with a client. So what has helped me is having what I call a decision-making rubric. And Ed and I have talked a bunch about this. This idea I took from a book called Essentialism. And he just talked about, and I also sometimes call this an opportunity bouncer. You have a bouncer at the door of a club, and the bouncer decides who gets in and who doesn't. And sometimes once they're inside, who gets thrown back out, right? So you have a set of three minimum criteria. And you'll see right here, these days for me, minimum criteria is, am I being given a seat at the strategy table? Do I believe I can have a good profit margin? Now, as freelancers selling our time, we don't really have a profit margin. So maybe effective hourly rate is perhaps a better way to think of this. But do I believe I can make what I want to make per hour in terms of my private internal baseline hourly rate, and then make 20 to 40% on top of that? That's what I'm talking about here, right? And do I like the people? Like, do I want to spend time with them? I think it was Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's partner, who said, pick your clients the way you pick your friends. And I believe in that. So if this is not a person I would spend time with under ordinary circumstances, they don't need to advance to the next round. So if none of these are met, then the answer, my answer is no. Sorry, if all three of these aren't met, then my answer is no. Now, if all of these are met, that doesn't mean it's a yes. It just means they advance. Once they advance, they must meet two out of three of these. Would I be proud to add this to my portfolio? Can I, like, I'm still a creative at heart. Like, I want to do cool work, work that I'm proud of, work that that satisfies my intellectual and creative curiosity. Would I be proud to put this in my portfolio? And if the answer is no, well, it had better have a reasonable time frame, deliverables, and expectations. And it had better offer me something else in terms of adding to my capabilities, right? Oh, I'm now getting paid to further develop or productize something that I can sell to other clients down the road, right? Now, for my brand, coaching brand, which is Freelance Cake, I have a whole different set of criteria here. I'm happy to share this, by the way. Y'all don't have to take furious notes. I'll just drop a link into the chat. But I'm an emotional person and a sensitive person, and I decide that I like somebody and I'll convince myself that it's a good opportunity because I like them. And then I need to take a step back and be like, Austin, clear your head, pull out your opportunity bouncer. Are they meeting all three of the minimum and two out of three of the maximum? And if the answer is no, then the answer is no, right? And so I hope that something like this can help you all, and I'll grab that link. Hope something like that can help you all with, sometimes when I'm not desperate for the money, how do I know an opportunity is a good one? And it's going to be very personal for each one of you. Okay, that link is in the chat if you want it. And then let me...
Yeah, and that's huge, Austin, because I find that it becomes an emotional decision most of the time. You know, when I worked for a business, I would have my own emotional, right, decision-making, but I would have a boss, I would have criteria, I would have constraints. So I couldn't just go by whatever felt right that moment. Now that I'm on my own, I think we all face this. It's like, oh my gosh, what do I do? All decisions are up to me. And it depends on what's been going on in your life that week and how you slept the night before and you know, what your bank account looks like. And it is very, very easy to make bad decisions. So having a rubric like this is huge. You just reminded me of this, and I'd forgotten about it. It's invaluable stuff. Yeah.
And after a while, you're able to internalize it, and you only need to take it out every once in a while. But I just needed to hand out yeses much more sparingly. And then when I felt the pinch with earning or with workflow or pipeline, I need to spend more time on marketing. I need to say no to less than ideal clients more and take the time I've just freed up and use it to go out there and sort of pound the pavement and find better opportunities.
There you go. All right. Nick has a question about pricing for strategy offers. He says, I feel a bit more anxious about it, but maybe it's because it's the first time I'm pricing strategy. Nick, you're not alone.
That's good.
Yeah. So let us know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I've started to set a pitch for strategy offers, and I'm sort of fairly rashly speaking, I'm fairly confident that I can deliver good value because, like most of us, I've been giving it away for free and I've got a lot of experience in journalism and content writing. But yeah, I'm just a bit anxious about it. Feels a bit uncomfortable, I think, because it's, first of all, a new kind of service. And also for some of the companies I talked to, I had the sense that they used to pay for consulting for maybe IT, sales, even like, you know, sustainability. Mm-hmm. But for content, they're used to going straight to the right. Let's produce, you know, Nick, I want you to produce 3 blogs on the future of AI or something. When it comes to strategy, it's a kind of harder sell, and I'm pitching it reasonably high in the thousands, maybe for about 3,000 for a half day, just on the assumption that, right, you can start high and then go a bit lower, but I've yet to sort of start low and go higher on price.
So one really easy rule of thumb, if you're like, I don't even know how to get started pricing these things, whatever the hourly rate is, in private, internal, effective hourly rate that you, once the smoke clears on a regular project, if you've made X number of pounds per hour, you're like, I feel great about that, right? Double that. And then however many hours you're going to spend on strategy. So if it's like, oh, I would feel great about making 325 pounds per hour, it's going to be like a 4-hour deal. Okay, then the minimum you would want to charge is like 1,250 pounds. That's a really easy rule of thumb, right? Mm-hmm. That being said, I think the reason it's hard to price strategy for me, or it has been in the past, is because it's fun and it's easy for me. Once you've done a few of these, y'all, I don't have to prepare for content roadmapping sessions other than showing up with a list of questions, which I open after the call has started. It's fun now because I've spent 6 years kind of developing some of this stuff, right? It's just harder to price things that start to feel easy. And so I just want to put that sort of blind spot out in the open for you. It's just, have you ever almost felt bad about getting paid for writing certain things because you're like, it took me 3 minutes to write the first draft of that email, right? So it's not going to let me do it. Let's see. So one of the ways that I'll tell my coaching clients to price their stuff, right, or a juicy offer, is to take a price that you feel great about and double it, right? Then add another 20% on top and then round up to a weird number. So those of you who were here last time, I think I walked you through my brand sprint deck. The price is like $3,375. I mean, I don't know what the 75 is for, except it's just weird enough to be convincing. Mm-hmm. So all I know is I want to make above 3,000, and after that I don't care, so I just kind of pick an arbitrary number, and 5 to 10% more isn't going to be a deal breaker. Like if they're not going to pay, if they're willing to pay $3,000, then $3,375 isn't a big deal. Right. But anyway, I think I've made the point clear. First rule of thumb, double it, add another 20%, see how you feel about it, put it out there. If they react negatively, no problem. What is a comfortable budget range for you? And then you shrink the scope accordingly.
Can I offer another kind of another metric or another formula, I should say?
Great.
So another way to look at it is I ask myself, what is the least amount of money, the absolute bottom that I would charge for this? And let's just say, Nick, it's $1,000. I'm about to do public math, so let me get my calculator.
This is gonna be interesting.
All right, I'll make it so I can do it in my head. $1,000. Then ask yourself, what is the absolute biggest number that I could see myself? And it would be a number where you would start sweating. Your voice might quiver when you tell them, right? So let's say it's 2,000. I'm keeping it simple. What I do is I take the middle point, which is 1,500, and love then it. I move slightly to the right of that, because the what I've heard before is like, yeah, just take the middle. Take the middle and push yourself a little bit. So maybe 1,700, 1,600, something along those lines, right? So love I'm in it. The third quartile, essentially, at that point. The other thing I would say, my experience has been, and I think you mentioned this, Nick, it's easier to start a little lower than it and move up than it is to start too high and then either psych yourself out and or like scare yourself to death and you never do it. Or you're just ineffective because they can see that you don't have the confidence to quote that. I love this business because you're never stuck at a number. Like usually with these engagements, you may do one, maybe two for a client, just depends on what it is. So guess what? That's behind you at that point. Let's say that by the end, you think I way underprice this. That's okay. Mm-hmm. It's behind you. And now you have the confidence to say, heck no, 1500. I'm never doing that again. I'm glad I did it because I learned this is at least $2,000. So sometimes it's, you know, you're not going to get locked in. This is not a life or death decision. You're not stuck with this number forever for every client. That's another way of thinking about it.
And keep in mind too, if you're using a strategy session as like you're a foot in the door offer, the lifetime value of the client could be potentially really high. I've been on a Charlie Munger kick because I'm reading a book called Poor Charlie's Almanac. So I've just been writing down quotes. I think you all will like this one. You don't need to take the last dollar. I think there's a lot of talk in freelance training circles online about like always maximize your price. And I can see the value in that because I think higher prices are better for your positioning. But when you're first getting a relationship started, you don't have to maximize the price because you're investing in the relationship. Right. So, but Ed, I love your formula. That's really good.
Super.
Thank you.
Can I add something to that? Because I've been in sales for 30 years. So I, you know, face these questions a lot. If you consider from the position of value pricing, let's say you're going to charge $2,000 for a consulting session. It makes you feel a little uncomfortable because you think it's a lot. All you got to do is save the customer from wasting their money on two blogs. Two article posts that go nowhere, useless. Might as well throw the money away. You can prevent him from doing that. It's well worth it. Their ROI is going to be through the roof, right? So you're saving them $2,000 of wasted money. If you can focus them, as you've said before, Ed, in previous sessions, picking the right upstream path, right? Instead of going down somewhere that doesn't take them anywhere. So
another way of looking at it. It's so good. It's like the kitchen design example that I gave, I think, last week or the week before. My buddy said, yeah, we paid $750, which I think is a bargain, for this company to come in and sit down with us, figure out what strategy, he didn't use that word, what strategy we wanted for this kitchen, and then come up with a design. Why would you skip that? Why would you say, no, I don't want to spend $750. Let's just kind of see how it goes. No, you would never do that because you're going to buy really expensive stuff that may not fit or look right or work.
Exactly.
Why do we treat it that way with our kitchen, but we don't do it in a business? That makes no sense. And in fact, he said, actually, we ended up hiring two companies and we just to see what their designs would look like so they can compete against each other. And I mean, internally, we didn't tell them. And we went with the one that had the better vision, who listened to us better. Like, that's brilliant.
So
good Jeff, point, Jeff. Good stuff.
Yeah. And really quick story on that. I was asked to help out with copywriting for a sales deck. And during the first call, the potential client was telling me like, oh yeah, we're going to be selling this idea to like corporations, like really large companies like Chick-fil-A, Experian. Like we're talking about companies that have like lots of employees, right? And then I gave him a middle of the road price. And then he came back and he said, you know, to be transparent, I think your price is inflated. Now, first of all, I was 99% sure that he had never actually bought copywriting for a sales deck before. So he had really no idea what it should cost. So he was having an emotional, it wasn't that my price was inflated. That was a word that showed he was having an emotional reaction about something he didn't fully understand. But I responded, basically said, oh, actually my price is middle of the road. Here are some other examples. You can go check them out. Like, so it's value-based pricing is really interesting because when you put out a value-based price to a client like I did, and they're like, oh yeah, we expect to use this deck to generate hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue for our company. And we don't feel good about paying you $3,000 to $4,000 for copywriting. Then I'm like, so if you think my price is inflated and you expect the deck to make hundreds of thousands of dollars for you, then you clearly see this as an expense, not an investment. And because that's true, I'm not your guy. And that's exactly what I said. If you need to see this as an expense, not an investment, I'm not your guy. That's okay. Never heard back from them. But that's another reason that value-based prices, particularly if you can quantify your price, it's really helpful to do that because then you kind of know how logical and strategic is this person going to be, right? If they're logical and strategic when you're talking about money at the very beginning of the conversation, they're likely going to be that way for the duration of your working relationship. But really good stuff, Jeff. Thank you.
Yeah. And in fact, Jeff has the next question. So that worked out. Jeff, you want to go ahead and ask about this?
Well, I'm a sales guy turned sales enablement copywriter. So I've never been comfortable with whole brand strategizing. You know, Austin, I listen to you. You sound like a god when it comes to figuring out where the brand should be in the positioning and that stuff, just like woohoo, way up here. But if I run into that with customers, I was at a conference this past week with a customer, and I was sort of talking about, you know, brand strategizing with some of these other industrial companies, and I realized I don't understand how to do that properly. But so my idea is it kosher to, in those situations, if I sell a package, to bring in one of you as an associate, you know, whether it's Austin or, you know, Alice or Carmen, whoever, you all sound better than I am at that kind of stuff. So I'd rather go with someone who's clearly an expert than try and fake it till I make it. You know what I mean? So do you guys ever do that? Do you ever go in as a team, you know, and try and, you know, I mean, I'm more than happy to hand over the whole fee to you guys if you can get the customer what they want, if I get something down the road, you know what I mean?
Well, that has always been my model, right? Like when I have bombed projects or just not delivered work I was proud of, it's when I got greedy. I wanted the full project fee for myself. I delivered pieces of the project that I knew weren't at the level that the client really deserved. And then you have enough experiences like that where I'm like, even if they were satisfied, I'm just like, yeah, it could have been better if I hadn't been. So it, I won't say greedy. I had that scarcity mindset, right? Where you're like, oh, like, I really need the full project fee. No, you need the part of the project fee that represents work where you can hit a home run, right? And so now my model, I don't have an agency. I'm a consultant and a writer. And when I see that a client really, really needs a website or a total redesign of their visual identity, and they're like, hey, can we hire you for that too? And I'm like, nope. But I can recommend some incredible visual identity designers. I've worked with them a bunch. I know they'll take good care of you and their work is top notch. I can, you know, send you to Ezekiel. He's my Webflow guy. You know, I can send you to Brett. He's my WordPress guy. You know, if you need full stack, I'll send you over to Ben, right? You know, if you need visual identity, Rebecca, you will not find better. Like, so I have always had more of a concierge model where you come to me with your problems and then I'm going to try to find the very best solution to your problem. And if there happens to be an opportunity for me to actually sell you something, I would be very happy to do that. I still have three children who need chicken nuggets and carrots to eat, right? But that's my very long-winded way, Jeff, of saying, I actually think people's respect for us goes up if we care enough about them and their businesses and their outcomes to turn down certain pieces of projects or turn down the whole thing altogether and be like, you know what? You don't need me. You need a website guy. You don't need me. You need this terrific photographer, right? So I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, focus on and pitch what you know you can do well. You even said it, that you've already been doing for free all these years. Start there.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and good. One final thing, like with something like brand strategy, keep in mind, I started at 02. And a lot of what I have been able to do over the years is find some kind of like, it was in, I think, the first or second training, I was talking about the 3-hour brand sprint from Google Ventures. Mm-hmm. You might have seen that link. Mm-hmm. I did not have my own brand development methodology, so I did that. But then I was like, this is kind of rudimentary in certain ways. And so I started doing some more exploring and adding to it. I read Building Your Brand Story or whatever, Donald Miller Story Brand book. And I got to the end, I was like, wait, this isn't branding. This is a little bit of positioning and then an extended copywriting exercise. Huh. Oh, weird. I disagree with them. I see some gaps here. And so as time goes on, you keep adding to your toolkit and maybe you eventually arrive at thinking, oh, I can do these big, robust brand development engagements now. But I'm like over 4 years into that type of strategy. And so if you want to do it, get started. If you don't want to do it and you can't imagine yourself doing it in the future, absolutely hire someone else to do it.
There's I was just going to say there's a book that I had read called Perfection Marketing. And it has actually a whole process that walks. It's like a narration where this person is walking the CEO through building his brand identity. It's really good. Nice. If you ever, you know, want, so it's by James Connor, The Perfection of Marketing.
Thank you for that, Recco. That's great. I want to make sure that this comes across, guys. A lot of the examples Austin has been using in the workshop, that there is that brand element to many of the engagements that he does, but those are examples. That doesn't mean, oh, you got, this is what you have to offer. that what's he, you've evolved into that. You just said it. You're what, a poetry major, you know? So it's, you got to find your thing. And I suspect that your thing, wherever you start, is not where you're going to end. That's probably mm-hmm. going to evolve, but the whole branding thing, that's just an example. That is not what selling strategy as a standalone service mm-hmm. is. That is one flavor of it. So,
well, that is true. And it's also true that, like, I just have a great deal of faith in the intelligence of writers. It just requires so many different aptitudes to do writing well. And that's one of the reasons Ed and I chose to present all nine flavors, is because it's like, listen, once you get started with strategy, a lot of it is just finding your toolkit and finding your confidence. But once you, there's just room to grow here in the strategy realm that I really don't see. Like in writing, you just, I guess you can keep like raising your per article price or per post or whatever, but eventually you're kind of like, can you charge $10,000 for a long form article? Like that's really, really tough. Maybe a sales page, right? So I started to bump into the pricing ceilings for certain writing projects, but I just have never bumped into a ceiling with strategy. So wherever you start, just know there's a lot of room to grow here.
All right. So I want to make sure we get to Stephanie's question here. It says, I have a client that wants to work on strategy with me, and I believe it would be more discovery and road mapping. She is upscaling her business and needs help developing the big picture, so to speak, and how to get there. I've worked with her as a copywriter, but I'm thinking of doing a 90-minute session and giving her an outline. Do you feel this is mm-hmm. on the right track? Great question, Stephanie. Let's bring you in.
Hi.
Hello.
So I have her, actually, this week has kind of been snowballed, but I have her, and now I have another gal that I met in Utah a couple of weeks ago that has reached out to me and wants to really build her social media presence. She wrote a book. So there's two people that have jumped in, and I'm not going to lie, I'm in a panic feeling. Because I'm like, I felt good about the one that I was talking about, because I was like, I think I'm on the right path. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, this is big. And so I just want to make sure I'm on the right path. And because I do really well speaking with them and talking them through it, I just want to make sure I'm writing, you know, asking the right questions, getting the right information, being able to map it out for them. I know the first client will probably want some writing done, but she also does her own writing. So I'm not as worried about that. I think she is going to be someone that is going to continually work with me as she progresses. Mm-hmm. The other one, I think she is looking for, she's looking for marketing through social media, but she's also looking for a path to build her audience more as well. Mm-hmm. So
there. Two things. One, this was one of the takeaways from this week's session, and I'm just going to drop it into the chat because it's a good anchor point to return to when your head is kind of spinning, right? What are we really doing here? We're creating space where you facilitate a process of self-discovery for a client. You ask good questions tied to the agenda, and the agenda in turn is tied to specific outcomes they want. And then you turn the mess of notes that you create together with the client into a clear and an organized and an actionable plan, right? That's the value, right? Now, yes, you can enrich with your own perspective. I've been spending a lot of time on LinkedIn this year. If a client wanted to do content road mapping with me and they were at all interested in LinkedIn, I have a point of view there, right? I could enrich their ideas with my perspective. But I really don't think that a lot of strategy sessions are me saying, let me show up as this singular talent, this genius, and then watch as I capture my lightning in a bottle and then like hand it over to you. So like I really do think that for the most part, the pressure is off. And that's why I'll say, like, hey, what is one outcome from our time together that would make this worth 10x what you're paying? And then I will just point all the questions at getting clarity around that. If we got clarity around one thing, what one thing would be worth 10x what you're paying me? Right? And it's important to remember that, like, a lot of people could actually get clarity if you gave them good questions and pen and paper and coffee and said, all right, lock yourself into a room for 90 minutes and don't come out, like, until you've got the clarity you need, right? But we're just, people aren't going to do it. So mm-hmm. I'm people's sort of like movable front porch. If you went onto your front, we have front porches in the South, right? But if you went to your own front porch, you could get this clarity, but you're not going to. Let me be your front porch, right? So that being said, ask both of the clients that question. What's the one outcome, or what one thing could we get clarity around that would make this worth it for you? And they're going to tell you. And then they may say more than one thing, and you're like, okay, that's actually 17 things. Can you pick one, right? Narrow it down to like the main one, right? And then I've given you all the questions that I use. You take that one thing, and then you go back to my list of questions. And then you just take the questions that apply to their outcome and put those in, and then ask your own. Set a timer for 15 minutes and say, what would I have to know in order to help them even like plan around that, right? Get clarity around that. Like with content and stuff, if they're like, we just need more good ideas, you're like, well, I would need to have clarity around their top performing like blog posts to date. So they actually need to look at their analytics and get some information for me before they even show up at this session, that kind of thing, right? But if you go in knowing the single most important outcome that they want or thing they want to get clarity around, and then you have questions like preloaded, you're going to show up and all you need to do is ask the questions you've already got. Other questions will naturally emerge. And think of it like, I'm going to coffee with my friend. She is upset about something. And if I wasn't just going to give her directive advice, but I needed to ask her more questions, believing that she already has the answer she needs inside of her, how would I do that for a friend? And I'm not joking that like that approach, very consultative, let them do 80% of the talking, take really good notes. That has been a winning approach for me.
Okay. So very similar, because like my background before I started writing was HR and law, like mediation type thing. So I'm comfortable in conversation. I just feel out of sorts at times in where I'm at, you know, mm-hmm. because it's different. You know, problem, solution, you know, you same process. It just feels very different for me. So I feel awkward, I think, mm-hmm. in getting the correct results. But this is helpful. Thank you.
Good. And we talked about this with Nick before you got on the call. If you get to the end of the session and you feel dissatisfied with how it went, you can always offer a follow-up session and say, hey, I still think there's work to be done. There's clarity to be had. Let's do another one. I'm not going to charge you more for that one.
Awesome.
Off, even for having to make that first session absolutely count, right?
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
All right. Great questions today, guys. Let's wrap this up with, I'd love for everyone to make a commitment here today. And that is, I want to see in the chat who is willing to commit between now and next week, if you haven't already done so, picking your first flavor the flavor are you going to start with? Crafting your offer if you've already picked your flavor. And then if you're already thinking of someone, I think like Nick, for instance, is already thinking of an opportunity. If you're there at that point, pitching a prospect or a client, okay, an offer. So one of those three, I just want to hear which one you're committing to. We want to get you moving. We want you to see progress, get results. I'd love for you to get an opportunity before our workshop is done. So yeah, and Austin had a great point. Set a timer for 30 minutes to craft that crappy first draft of your offer. That's all I'm asking. If that's your stage, that's the result. That's the commitment, a crappy first draft. If you haven't picked your flavor you're going to start with, that's your commitment. And if you're ready to pitch. All right. So Al says, I'm moving. So DP MDD. Stephanie, road mapping, discovery 90 minutes and want to pitch it this week. Love it. Great. Yeah, you're at that stage right now. Might as well. If you have an opportunity, hey, ready, fire, aim. We don't have to like get it perfect. You already trust in a relationship can overcome a lot that you may not have yet. Mm-hmm. Who else? I want to see some other commitments here. Charlotte says, we talked about it last time, but circulating the emails of everyone in the class so we can give each other feedback on our offers if we want. Can we get that list soon? Yeah, let me think about that, Charlotte. I don't remember seeing that last time. I apologize. Maybe it was after
that
I left
me.
The call.
Okay. It was after you left. Yeah.
Yeah, I just need to see. I want to be respectful. You know, one of the things that I tell everyone here, it's like, hey, if you share your email with me, like I'm never going to share that with anybody else. So I would want permission for everyone. So if you want to, if you're willing to connect with others, let me find a practical way of doing that. So just start thinking about that and I'll come up with some mechanism for capturing those. Nick said, we'll pitch an offer to a possible client, crappy draft or otherwise. There you go. Love it. Yeah. Okay. Christine says, we'll come up with a pitch for my existing retainer client. Love it. Love it. There you go. All right. Guys, next week, we're going to start getting into marketing and selling. You know, how do you get the word out? How do you market these productized services? And then how do you get in the right conversations so that it's kind of a seamless thing? And you just kind of say, all right, well, let's get started. So that's next week. Be on the lookout for that email on Monday. Charles says, we'll come up with a road mapping offer and pitch it to a client. Love it. You guys have a great weekend and we'll see you here next Thursday. Take care, everybody.